Bernie Moreno is looking out for himself, not us. Moreno is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Moreno has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by AFSCME People, AFSCMEPeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Make no mistake, Trump-backed Bernie Moreno was a MAGA mistake for black families in Ohio.
We're not going to replace racism in this country from decades ago with a new form of racism, which is what DEI is.
If Bernie Moreno is elected senator, he will support the MAGA playbook and implement the thinly disguised racist Project 2025 agenda. That means ending diversity, equity, and inclusion programs that exist to correct the impacts of racism. MAGA extremists like Moreno believe programs that have helped our families are entitlement programs, but they have no problem giving their buddies a boost by passing more tax giveaways for rich folks like themselves. Black Americans like me have worked hard and persevered in fighting for a fair shot. We've come too far to let self-serving extremists like Bernie Moreno take us back. That's why we must re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown. He has fought for equal opportunity for black families and will continue to do so. Go to OhioVoterGuide.org and register by October 7th. Paid for by Wynn Senate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WynnSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
Happy Tuesday, and thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome. Hey, there is so much that happened over the weekend. Not to mention, I just witnessed one of the greatest spectacles in the history of sports, not just combat, not just our sport of MMA, ever. And coming up on today's show, Valentina won in dominant fashion, but she also made a massive mistake. Plus, Diego Lopez got the marquee win he needed, and Michael Chandler has moved off the McGregor fight. So much to get to in today's show, but let's begin with Saturday night's main event. O'Malley and Merab. I've tossed and turned over this, and I went back and watched it again. And there was things that I missed. Now, let me start at the very beginning and why I missed it. I'm there live, right? You're counting on me. You're counting me to see this live. I didn't see when Herb stepped in and broke it up. I had my earpieces in. And one thing that was unique about this venue is for the first time ever, you get to hear these guys. So I'm hearing the commentator, Daniel, Joe, Anik, talk about Herb talking to athletes and possibly the corner, but I didn't see it. So see, it's very different when you go back and watch it, because it was Merab that started this. The commentary stayed on Herb. It was Merab that started this. And in sports, whether it's you or particularly if you're a coach, if your athlete loses focus, it is game over. I mean, it is a nightmare. You would, oh my goodness, what happened here? So when I re-see it and I see Merab start pointing and start yelling at what turned out to be Coach Tim Welsh, it was a very dramatic moment. So, okay, Herb gets in. And Herb does everything right. He tells him, hey, knock it off. Don't start this. All right, great. They go back to fighting. Into that round comes, Herb goes and talks to Tim Welsh. And Herb informs him, which also inform me, I did not know this, that there's a rule that's called excessive coaching. So Herb is now letting him know, at least verbally to some degree, that this rule exists. As you can hear, that's pretty wide open for interpretation. But I could apply it, and I'm going to apply it to you possibly later in the evening. All right. So And guys, this is just the first 5 minutes. So we're getting ready to go into the second round, and O'Malley gives rounds away. That's not totally uncommon. Anderson used to give rounds away. Nate Diaz almost always will give a round away. Kind of warming up and kind of learning is what it looks like from the outside. A little more of the reality is those elite guys are making adjustments. They're not actually slow starters, like some might believe. They're making adjustments. O'Malley knew from Jump Street, and I'm talking about the moment he got done with Chito Vera and Marab is in the front row. He knows from Jump Street, I'm going to have to stop a double leg. So I'm not overly worried about this contest because, and I'm talking about guys just going to the second round. I'm not sure this contest has started, right? That was just kind of my perspective. There's plenty of time, plenty of math. You got a guy that's looking for a knockout anyway. O'Malley was breathing pretty good. If you can eat up a little bit of clock, it's very strategically good, even if it moves you to a 10-9 the opposite way against someone like Marab. Like that conditioning, knowing how to slow things down. I'll give you a great example. Conor McGregor versus Khabib. Conor had to worry about two things. Takedowns, overwhelming cardio. That's what Khabib brought to the table. The better athlete, the better DNA, the better movement, the better one shot night over, all went to Conor. Conor had all of those things. Khabib would not disagree. One thing that happened with Conor when he went down is he stayed there after the fact. Coach Kavanaugh talked about, we knew if we went down, we're going to lose that round. He's going to keep us there long enough to lose the round. So just stay there. Settle down. Don't waste your energy trying to get up. Don't waste your energy trying to finish him. Stay there. And I've never heard that strategy before. That's why I bring it back to that. I have literally never heard that except Coach Kavanaugh when he said it about those two after the fact. And there's a lot of similarities between McGregor and Khabib, Marab and Sean. So as the fight gets going, and you'll see this in boxing even more than you'll see it in MMA, if something works, if a combination works, go back to it. The theory on that is a guy can't change in the moment. So if you can hit him one to the head and two to the body, go back to the head, go back to the body, go back to the head, go back to the body. We also see it in MMA. And it was in any bad moment that Marab had, it's when Marab got away from that. Marab got away from, hey, I've already had success closing the distance, getting him down. When I got him there, I was able to get some good time. When Marab would get away from that, it was problematic. When he would come back in, so now you've got a technique. You don't necessarily have a battle of skills. You don't have a martial arts display, which the techniques and the movements to a purist in martial arts, which to a large degree, Sean is. And Sean certainly is to a much larger degree than Marab. And you guys have seen this, okay? Even if you didn't do martial arts, you will have seen this. They will move you up in a belt system in a number of traditional martial arts with things that you will do with the air. It's called kata. You do not have to compete. You don't even need to drill with a partner. It's about movements and fundamentals and making sure that you understand how to do those. And one way you can take that away is when you grind a guy, you grab a hold of him and you get him down. So I have to go back to that because it's rinse and repeat where it was the same movement, right? At the end of the day, we had a guy that was good with the double legs. Go out there and score some double legs. So my partner, Ryan, loves marketing. And he's told me this a number of times, and I had his voice echoing in my ear as I'm watching this master monster event going down at the Sphere. Ryan, the UFC has been disciplined from day one to put the best against the best. They will not get away from that. It is what separates them from boxing and every other combat sport. It doesn't matter if you've got boxes upon boxes of t-shirts and merchandise for the bigger star and you got to go stick them in a rented storage unit. The best will fight the best. And as I'm watching this unfold, I'm watching their biggest star, who is in a nightmare of a matchup, And he's having a difficult time with one position. I'm watching that happen, and I'm thinking about that. And I'm thinking, yeah, this is exactly what Ryan told me that Dana had said, and I heard him do it with my own ears almost 20 years ago. Evident of the fact that Umar Nurmagomedov is sitting there waiting for him. Right? I mean, O'Malley goes out and has his best performance ever against Chito Vera, only to come to the post-fight press conference and find that DraftKings has him a 2-1 underdog against Merab. Merab just had his best performance ever against O'Malley, only to come to the press conference and find out he is an opening line underdog to Nurmagomedov. And it is something about our sport. It is something about this division. And when I look at the X's and O's, Merab is good with doubles, and he has a stunning level of conditioning. I mean, I would think if those two are going to fight, okay, we can go ahead and bet. But if we're going to put them in a CrossFit exercise, or we're going to put them in a 100-yard sprint, or we're going to put them in a 10-mile ride, I feel like we all know, right? Like, he's just made for these kinds of things. And I didn't think there was a huge gap between these two skills. As much as the fight was clear, how the judges are going to score this, I didn't think there was a gap in the skills. The stand-up and the hurt and the pain on the face and the frustration and the mental side of it, you're putting boxes in O'Malley. That takedown, that conditioning, that, hey, maybe I'm going to look at least like I want it more. I haven't had it and you have. You went to Merab. But I don't feel like that's anything that us as reasonable people didn't know ahead of time. I want the Bullet to like me. I like the Bullet. I've also never met her. And in the role that I have now, if I was to meet her, it would be because she got brought to set where I was working. And when I'm in that suit and I'm holding that microphone, I'm putting the athletes over, period. Over here, I'll be a little looser. We'll talk about some different stuff. But I'm putting them over, period. So if I was to meet her and she was to come to set for a post-fight interview, I would like if she was pleasant and thought I was pleasant. I would like that. But I find myself almost unanimously, for the better part of 7 years, giving teachings to her as opposed to giving congratulations to her. Now, I would like to buy myself into this club, right? I want to buy myself to tell you that I'm like that too, which is why it's okay that I pointed out I had a fight, a very meaningful match in my career that nobody knows about. I got no credit for it. And I fought a gentleman named Paulo Filho. Paulo Filho was undefeated. He was the WEC world champion, but he was also in the rankings, in the universal rankings, number one. At that time, in fact, Anderson Silva was number two. And something about that is those two were workout partners. They were also both managed by Ed Soros. So when you would talk to Paulo and you would talk to Anderson and you would talk to Ed Soros, they weren't all like covering for one another to be nice. They all said that Paulo was ahead of him at that point. I remember Dan Henderson, who I really looked up to, was number nine. Just for reference, Jeremy Horn, who nobody had beaten in like 24 straight fights, was number four. It was an interesting ranking. So this guy's number one. I'm not ranked. So to beat him, which, by the way, now you get a championship opportunity, it was really exciting for me. My family flew out for it. It was televised. I believe it played on a Wednesday night at that time. And I believe it was a network that I don't think exists anymore. Something called Fuel TV, but it was a big deal for me. That fight was so unpleasant to watch that the UFC had just bought this organization that we competed. It was called the WEC. And so now they're rolling contracts over. They're gonna close down under the letters WEC and just do those very fights in the octagon. They did not bring Paulo Filho. That fight was so unpleasant for them that they did not bring the guy who was the champion and number one. Now, they did bring me, but not without telling me. Like, they didn't just bring me and it rolls over. I'm sure he could figure this out. I don't know. You know, people are booing and he'll know. No. They brought me in the back and let me know. We would not be bringing you. We just don't know how to tell that story to the audience because you won. This is your pass. This cannot happen again. Okay. Now, I take the time to tell you that because there was a learning moment there. I did not like that and it embarrassed me. And I also didn't understand it. The highest thing I had ever done was to come from college wrestling. The crowd would not boo you. They just simply wouldn't. On the rare occasion that the crowds do boo in wrestling, it's actually because they're really engaged. I mean, it's a really positive energy boo. It's not like a boo anywhere else. I can't relate. You go out there, you find whatever strategy you can, you get your hand raised. You get told good job for that. I'm getting the opposite. So it was really a time of reflection. It was really a time of, hey, what's going on here? What am I missing? I won. This guy was ranked number one, and he was 16 in the world, and we're on television. I won. And I needed some time. I needed some time to process and understand that there is a business. And that whole television thing you talk about, to stay on television, there's something known as ratings, where people need to tune in. Might sound simple to you guys. I did not know. I just did not understand it at that time. So this was my wake-up call. Now, what can I do about it? How am I going to do anything about it? That's conversation for another day. But at some point, like anything, right, the cold water's got to be splashed in your face and you got to see it. So I see the bullet. The bullet, I don't know of anyone. And I don't know that this is a stat. I can't give you this as an official stat. I just don't know of anyone that's had more title fights than her. It is a very big deal what she did Saturday, because it moves her into a rare club. There's been guys from the beginning time trying to cheat this club. And that club is, how many time world champion are you? When you're putting out programs and posters and Bruce Buffer's announced it before fights and the way they're going to read it to the audience when they induct you into the Hall of Fame, like your actual number for you to be a two-time world champion, you've had to have lost it. So now you get a guy, right? You'll get a guy that's a straight-up killer that nobody could beat. He's done more than anybody, sold more tickets, done more pay-per-views. He's a bigger star than all of them, but he's a one-time world champion. He doesn't like that. He doesn't like that you're going to be a three-timer and he's a one-timer when he's never lost. So then he just starts talking about each of his defenses, and then it becomes a championship. If you defended about five times, you're a five-time world champion, which is simply not true. Those are amateur rules. In the Olympic Games, if you win it and then you come back and win it again, you're two-time. Those are amateur rules. The professional sports don't work that way. So I'm telling you this because Valentina's resume really got a lot better Saturday. This is a big deal. For an older athlete who loses their position, they're not getting that position back. Now, on the one-offs, such as Valentina, where they do, they had to show a real humility. And they had to go back and they needed to learn new things. She did that. So she's demonstrated her ability to learn from her mistakes and to make adjustments. She has people, her coaches, her trainers, I believe her own mother, I know her own sister, that can get to her that she can rely on. She can trust them. But they don't bring her Uncle Chael. She has shown an ability to demonstrate to people, look back, right? Just like I had to do with Paulo Filho. I had to look back and go, oh my, I got to look at this differently. She showed an ability to do that physically. But I don't know of anyone that's ever had as many world title fights as her. Now, she is the leader. This one, I can tell you, is an absolute stack. There has never been somebody to have more world title fights in non-main events. There has never been a world champion to have the longevity in non-main events than her. As a matter of fact, physically, she made adjustments from the last time with Grasso, but that's not the only thing that was different in this fight. This fight 1 year ago against the same lady for the same prize was a main event. It coming down the card. I don't tease it for that. It was the right move. It should not have been the main event. What I'm speaking to is now you have the evidence. And just to keep bringing myself back into this, but I'm trying to say that to let you know, I understand. I come from a good place with this. I'm sharing my own embarrassment and my own experience. But had Joe Silva and Scott Adams and Reed Harris not pulled me into that room and informed me of these things, I might not have ever got there. I had what I wanted and what I set out to do, which was a win over a guy ranked in front of me. That was the entire plan and strategy. So at some point, right, someone's got to grab you. And moving down the card has got to be one of those wake-up calls. And the fight is going to be what the fight is. And there are times you've got to use strategies. I mean, I'll give you a guy right now, Stephen Thompson. If you're one of the extremely rare humans walking this earth that is going to get the jump on Wonder Boy, I can tell you right now, there's a problem with engaging, right? There's some guys that if you're going to win, boy, there's things that you got to do to slow down the action. And with Valentina, I get that. I fully understand. And those things are out of your control to a degree. I fully understand. But you now have another chance. And the chance is that microphone. And if you speak seven languages, I told you, I don't know of a mixed martial arts with more success than her. I don't know of anybody that speaks more languages than her. But to be able to speak seven languages and not relay a message to anyone in any corner of the world is a very bizarre thing. If you don't have a name coming out of your mouth, if you are a champion and you win and Joe Rogan is interviewing you and you don't have somebody else's name coming out of your mouth, your other option in that moment is to retire. Anything short of that, and you will have blown the spot. And you will not find an example through history of using other people. There is no example in history where that post-fight interview has been interesting and meaningful. You either used somebody else's name. And by the way, maybe you didn't call him out. Maybe you didn't tease him or give him a hard time. Maybe you said something really nice about him. Or maybe you said, they don't deserve it, I'm not going to fight him. But you would have said somebody else's name. There is now another person as part of this story. Or you retire. She said two names, Hunter Campbell and Dana White, neither of which are licensed to fight within her weight class or division. It was, in any of the seven languages she speaks, a complete miss. Dana White goes to the post-fight press conference. Dana White said he doesn't know what's going to be next for Lopez. And Lopez was definitely a star of the evening. Whatever happened the night that Lahal became champion over Leon, do you guys remember that post-fight press conference? Because it wasn't one of these, oh my goodness, I'm so happy what I saw, and you know, let's figure out what goes here from Lahal. Well, I don't know what it was. But it wasn't that. Okay, but it's the same thing with Merab. I don't know what that was. I don't know if there was a annoyance with that style that Merab had, an annoyance with the fight, if the yelling to the cornermen, if the kissing, I don't really know. I just know it wasn't a, the Merab era is here. He's won 10 fight. Like, you know, we knew it was coming. It wasn't that. So, Valentina, Grasso, right? One of those moments. Had one of those myself, a guy named Paulo Filho. Nobody wants to see me now. I want to be told good job. I just accomplished something over a world champion. I want to be told good job. Good job. Your job's to entertain. You didn't do that. So I feel for these ladies. But what I'm bringing to you is that the star of the night in many ways truly was Diego Lopez. Truly. Diego Lopez has done everything that you need to do except have that crowning win over a name recognizable fighter. That is what was truly on the line here. So many people counted him out, by the way, and I'm talking about Brian Ortega. I was not so sure. I'm saying, hey, wait just a minute. This is good money. At one point, my partner DraftKings were willing to pay 2.5 to 1. That sure Lopez was going to win. Now when DraftKings publicly takes on the rankings committee, I like that. I like it.
because DraftKings will do it publicly and they'll put their money where their mouth is. The rankings committee might be a person, a group of people. It might even be a computer program like the BCS used to do. It is unmanned, unnamed, and no one knows. And I only share that they said Lopez not only can't beat Ortega, they said there's only two guys in the company that can beat Ortega, and they said they know of 12 people in the company that can beat Lopez. That is exactly what it means when you're ranked number 13. When you're ranked number 13, the experts hired to do this are saying, I know 12 people that can beat him. Okay. Lopez, I apologize, Ortega, ranked number 3. Means there's only two around here that can beat him. So I bring that to you because how does 13 become a 2-1 favorite over number 3? Got a disagreement, don't we? All right. So Lopez is the real deal. I didn't understand that he had that power. I've seen him knock people out. I know that he is powerful. That's different. To have that kind of power that you can sustain, that's the real rarity. So many people believe that they saw Lopez get tired against Dan Ige. That, hey, there's an opening right there. Before you start talking about title fights, man, hey, this guy barely finished 15 minutes. Don't talk about 25. This was a real narrative that he was trying to overcome. Now, it's not what we saw, though, right, guys? Right? I'm talking to the Eagles over here. Bad Guy Inc., we made it very clear, he was 145 pounds and took on a man that was 165 pounds. When you're pushing and pulling that size around, for sure, you will get fatigued at an unreasonable rate. And that got proven. That got proven to be right. He could hold up, and that power and that duration lasted. And Ortega did what Ortega was supposed to do, and he did what I told you guys I thought he was going to do. And he didn't win the fight. But he represented the very reason that Dana White put this event on. The grit, the determination, that fighting spirit. He knew when the math and numbers went against him, but he chose to go on anyway. So Dana White says, I'm just laying out the fight for you. It's a big deal. The sphere and all the eyeballs, and if you were to look at anybody and go, boom, this is the one whose stock raised the most, it just might have been Diego Lopez. So Dana gets to a post-fight press conference and Dana talks about it. Dana puts him over. Says how great he did and excited. And you know, he's got that look in his eye. He was yelling tonight. Boy, he wants his opportunity. And I'd be very open to having him be the backup fighter for Ilya Topuria and Max Holloway. So this is where we leave off. That is massive. That is the next best thing to a title shot. There is not anything that Dana could have said. If Dana says anything that lets you know that your journey to a title shot physically might be over. All right, he didn't say, hey, he needs one more. We don't know who it's going to be. Hey, I'm going to put him into a number one contendership. Let's see what that. He doesn't say any of those things that guarantees that you have to get in that cage again and compete. Very, very big deal. And I remember thinking, wow, this is really something. I get back to the hotel. I'm going to my manias and my elbows, and I'm keeping up right now. I'm depressed. Fights are over. I'm getting the blues. I'm going and checking the storylines. Well, one of the stories that come to is Volkanovski is open to fighting Lopez, but Volkanovski was, and this is consistent. He has never come off this. Volkanovski has insisted that his next fight is a title fight. And the way Volk is speaking, he's not speaking as though this is what he's campaigning for. He is speaking, though, this is so, meaning he has already been told that from the boss. He hasn't said those words. When I say he's speaking, I mean he's speaking to my ears and my interpretation. I get that things change. But I believe that Volk is totally confident because when he spoke about Lopez, yes. The answer was yes. And not if Lopez goes and beats the winner of Topuria Max. He was saying right now, if it's for an interim belt. Now, how did we get there? That is very interesting. Because that's not the first time. Volkanovski is not the first time in recent memory to call for an interim championship when there is no rumor that there's anything wrong with the undisputed champion. There is no rumor even out there about Ilya Topuria or that he would need some time off. So the idea that you're then going to have an interim championship, it was just a fascinating claim. I'm just bringing it to your guys' attention. Now, these two things don't totally work, do they? I don't know that you can have, okay, hey, Volk, when you come back, whenever that is, it'll be for a title. I don't know that you can have that and put Diego in the backup spot. There might be a time. In fact, I feel like there is, even though my mind can't think of who it was. There might be a time where we had a backup fighter, and I'm talking about a real backup fighter, where they know about it, they train for it, they get licensed, they weigh in. I can't remember a time where those things happened and then they were not next. Happened with Volkanovski, as a matter of fact. Oliveira, Islam, Volk goes in, Volk goes on and gets a title opportunity next. Now, it wouldn't guarantee that it was Lopez, but I do think that Max and Topuria is a wildly important match. And we don't do interim. I apologize. We don't do backup fighters all the time. I wish we did. In a matter of fact, it has never been disclosed to us, the audience, the rhyme or reason for the nights that we do have a backup fighter. I mean, I would just assume that Tom Aspinall is the backup fighter for the Garden, the end. Let's make the announcement now. It's great marketing. They're having problems getting this back and forth going with the two. Just bring him in that announcement. I think it works, but they don't agree with me. A lot of times we'll have backup fighters, including over the weekend with Fiora, where we're never told. You've got to watch the actual weigh-in at 9 a.m. to see him come up. As a matter of fact, they don't even bring that backup fighter to the ceremonial weigh-in later in the day. There is no announcement, no headline. You literally have to be in front of the internet watching to even know it's a thing. But I don't know that you can do both at the same time. I don't know that you can have told Volk, hey, Volk, when you come back, it will be for the belt. Hey, Lopez, big fight. We need to bring you in. Now, guys, do you see where I'm going with this? Do you see? I hope I didn't bounce around too much. Volk would know. If something's going on in that division that hasn't got to us, Volk would know. And a lot of times when you know and you're sworn to secrecy, you keep that deal. But then your mind gets a little bit confused on what's been released and what hasn't. So is this a Freudian slip by Volk? Is that what happened here? Is there a rumor that there is something going on and it wouldn't just be between Max and Topuria? It would have to be Topuria specifically to call for an interim match. Lopez, and these fights aren't all getting backup fighters. So for Lopez to be put into a position to be the backup fighter, is there a rumor out there? Did the company have a Freudian slip by saying, we need a backup fighter? Did Volk, who of course would know what is going on, forget that that hasn't been revealed to us? Is Uncle Chael been on an airplane for the last day and missed something? Why do we have a top mind and a top guy in Volkanovski believing there needs to be an interim fight? Why is that? And is it any relation to the reason that we've been told that we're probably going to have a backup fighter for the featherweight fight? Any athlete who competes at the highest level will tell you the importance of having a great team. Even in individual sports like boxing, wrestling, MMA, there is always a team of coaches and training partner who helped you get to the top. Think about Simone. Think about Serene. Think about Tiger. Think about Mike Tyson, Mayweather. They all have a coach. And the same thing goes with business. You need a solid team of trusted and knowledgeable people to help you advance if you're in the e-commerce business. Let Shopify be that teammate that helps you level up. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not so secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going through. Businesses that sell more, sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/chael, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/chael, like the famous gangster, to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/chael.
Bernie Moreno is looking out for himself, not us. Moreno is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Moreno has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by Ask Me People, AskMePeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Make no mistake, Trump-backed Bernie Moreno was a MAGA mistake for black families in Ohio.
We're not going to replace racism in this country from decades ago with a new form of racism, which is what DEI is.
If Bernie Moreno is elected senator, he will support the MAGA playbook and implement the thinly disguised racist Project 2025 agenda. That means ending diversity, equity, and inclusion programs that exist to correct the impacts of racism. MAGA extremists like Moreno believe programs that have helped our families are entitlement programs, but they have no problem giving their buddies a boost by passing more tax giveaways for rich folks like themselves. Black Americans like me have worked hard and persevered in fighting for a fair shot. We've come too far to let self-serving extremists like Bernie Moreno take us back. That's why we must re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown. He has fought for equal opportunity for black families and will continue to do so. Go to OhioVoterGuide.org and register by October 7th. Paid for by Win Senate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
You guys have heard the expression, never let the truth get in the way of a good story, correct? I'm for it to a degree. I mean, if you're telling a story, like I hear words now from fake news to misinformation. I hear these words. And I can only tell you the same as you guys could do to me, the way that you could relate. I got taken into the library for the first time. I was in the fourth grade, Mr. Bailey's class. Wilsonville Elementary, get taken to the library, and the librarian, we're all sitting down on the floor, and the librarian tells us there are two kinds. She's trying to show us how to use the library. She tells us there's two kinds of stories. There's something called fiction, and she explains what that is, and she tells us there's something called nonfiction, and she tells us what that is. So I've never fully got the fake news and misinformation. I've never fully got it. You have fiction and you have nonfiction. I mean, to this day, I still feel as though Mrs. Eilers, the wonderful librarian, told us accurately at Wilsonville Elementary when I was 9 years old. Now, the greats will understand the importance of a story. And to make believe that Jake Paul is anything less than a great, guys, excuse me, he might be the greatest. Present company excluded, he might be the greatest. So Jake Paul, I don't know if you guys saw this, but if you did, and boy, believe me, millions did. This was so captivating. He dresses up. Apparently Jake Paul has got a deodorant company and he's partners with Sean O'Malley. So he's making a video. Okay, it turns into a commercial for this deodorant brand, but he's making a video. And he's explaining to the world that he would like to go to the fight to support his business partner, Sean O'Malley. He'd like to do that, but he can't. He can't because of this. And he throws to footage, of which would be illegal for him to have unless somebody allowed him to have it. Now, I'm only sharing that because it's him at a UFC. And I remember this night on a personal level because Daniel Cormier, who was working, left his post and went over and got face-to-face with him. And you can't do that. Daniel was wrong. He shouldn't have done that. I don't bring that up to give a man a hard time. I bring it up to let you know, I remember this. I remember this night. And everyone's booing Jake Paul. They hate him. And Jake is taking it in. He holds his phone back and he's doing like a live on Instagram or social media, and he's doing this live thing of all 15,000 people hating him, and I believe chanting F Jake Paul. All these details are relevant, okay? Because Jake shows this video as proof that he is banned from UFC events. All properties, that Dana White has a lease on, and therefore he can't go and support his business partner, Sean O'Malley, in a deodorant brand that until this video, I did not know existed or that it was co-owned by these two. Now, Jake's going to go, though. He's going to break the rule. He's got himself a ticket, and he's going to dress in disguise. Because he is very confident that the people at T-Mobile will recognize him, and if they don't, somebody else will, and he's right about that. And that the ban will be in effect. Now, he's taking on a risk here. He could go to jail for trespass. Because he does know. He is aware that he can't be there. So he goes into disguise, puts a disguise on, shows him walking into the venue, gets in, he gets exit, he gets through security. Then he's having interaction with fans, then he's right down there close. All right? It's the whole thing. You don't need to go watch it. I have now told you everything. Do you remember a minute ago when I was talking to you about fiction and nonfiction? I think those things happened. This disguise was so good that it could have been somebody else. I believe he would have hired a makeup person. And I do believe that that was actually him, though it wouldn't be relevant to the story. He could have said it was him and sent somebody else in, which would be even more brilliant. But the part of the story that I do know, he's not banned from property. He would not be arrested for trespass. He was not served any type of stay away. He could have come right in. In fact, he could have come in on a comped ticket. And that, I think, is the part that I like the most, truly. I appreciate that they have deodorant. It probably smells very good. I've been around Sean and Jake. They both smell very nice. But as far as a marketing campaign goes, as far as putting something out and laying it out and getting the world to know and doing it for next to nothing for free, this is great. This is really great. Conor McGregor had done an interview, and I appreciated it. He was at a bare-knuckle boxing event, which, the way the marketing gimmick goes, is he is now a partner and or owner. Very good angle. It's a very good angle. De La Hoya would do that with Mosley and Bernard Hopkins. But don't ask the question, hey, how much did they, how big of a check did they write to buy in? To buy that 1% that they had, how big was the check? Like, don't ask that question. But if you take that out, you got a good story here. Connor's up there, and I really appreciated it. I have met this Connor every time we're one-on-one. And he is very likable. And he is very measured. He is very calm. And he's not attention-seeking. Now, the difference about when I have been around that Connor one-on-one, so there was no camera. He did not have to worry that I was going to go out and tell people what was. He was a guy. He was not performing. When the camera's on, it was a very rare glimpse into Conor McGregor, the person, because he dropped the act. His voice was different. His tone, his cadence was different. I liked it. I thought it was a really interesting and refreshing piece. And Conor went as far as to say, and don't forget, guys, maybe I took for granted you know this. This was done only hours after the announcement of Chandler versus Oliveira. So Conor lets us in on the fact that he didn't know. He let us in on the fact that, no, this does not mean I am fighting somebody else and have moved on from Chandler. I am not fighting, which is why Chandler needed a new opponent. Connor's the one that let us in on this. As a matter of fact, and this was the big one. This is when you realize, hey, we're getting a shoot right here. Set him out of the loop. Set him out of the loop, which is a really nice and non-embarrassing way of saying my phone calls aren't getting picked up and or returned. In fact, he went further with that to say that he has reached out to Sheik Turkey, how do you say it? For assistance, that's an exact quote. To ask if he could assist me here, if he could just talk to the, you know, you're going to be with them. I'm Would you ask them for me? It was a very interesting thing. And you're in this spot of humility, which he was. And it was so refreshing. And then he said a few things, scratching my head and going, now, wait a second, what? And one of those things is Connor wanted to do a co-promote. He wanted bare knuckle boxing in conjunction with McGregor Sports and Entertainment to be able to do a co-promote and for the UFC to allow him to do that. And I'm adding a lot of words to what Connor said. There's a couple of times where I said, and this is what Connor said, just so you understand. There's some quotes that I'm giving, and then some other thing, I'm trying to explain to you what he said. I'm trying to explain to you what he said without actually quoting him. And the reason that Connor was interested in a co-promote with McGregor Sports and Entertainment and Bare Knuckle Boxing, and the reason he wanted UFC to allow him to do it, is because he's under an exclusive combat contract with the UFC. No, he's not, but that's another day. And he said, I like to stay busy. I got to stay busy. And he's talking about going into training camps. And he's talking about having a fight. He's talking about having a goal. He's talking about having a purpose. And these are very real things. And Volkanovski let us in on all of those things. But Volk went further as to tell you why it was important. Before Volk, BJ Penn let us in on these things. But BJ Penn took the risk of telling you why, in his personal life, that was really important. Connor didn't do that. But frankly, he didn't owe it to us. Volk and BJ didn't owe it to us, but boy, it was compelling, wasn't it? And it was such a dynamic spot that when I'm hearing Connor say these things, I'm then also, at least to a degree, able to guess why his phone calls aren't getting returned. Not for nothing. If you're talking about doing a carve-out, just so you guys understand, okay, that would be like an amendment. Think of the Constitution. That's probably where you hear the word the most, is through the news, right, in that regard. If you're talking about getting lawyers or you're talking about changing anything within a contract that's already done, that's not the phone call that gets returned. And I don't know that Connor's bullish on this. I don't know that, like, that must be done. He also said that he has two fights left on his UFC contract. But I'm sharing for you, I'd have a hard time imagining how or why Connor is not, as he put it, in the loop. How and why he found out that his opponent, that is, you know, for 2 years, has got another contract, thus voiding the one that he has. And he had to find that in the media. I'm just having a hard time. I could give you some pretty good guesses, but most of those guesses would be for the whole. They would be broad strokes. There are some very nice liberties taken for that one, being Conor McGregor. However, if you're having ideas that are anything, and this is before I inform you, right? This is before we get into the whole thing that there is no such thing as McGregor Sports and Entertainment. Like before we go down that road, the money team and Francis Ngannou had one. Before we get into the weirdness of that, we do have to understand there's already a contract here. If there's anything attempting to be changed, there would be a resistance in that phone call. But where we were at with McGregor a week ago, we the audience, from what we were told. But hey, we were only a month off. We were a month and a city off. UFC wanted Los Angeles in January. We had the McGregor, we had the opponent Chandler, we had the weight class at 170, we had the rounds at 5. McGregor wanted all of those same things, but he wanted it in Vegas. That's important to Connor. And there really is nothing quite like fighting in Vegas, particularly when your audience and your crowds, as over as McGregor, are coming from somewhere else. Those people are not, the same numbers aren't, not even a fraction of them could be expected to go to Los Angeles. So it's very different. And so therefore it's very important to Connor. Fine. But can we agree that we're pretty close? Pretty close now. Where does that go? Why has this fallen apart? Did I misunderstand Connor just a little bit? If he's looking for carve-outs or he's looking to bring in, it wouldn't go hand in hand. I think Connor's sincere. I'm falling for it, guys. I think that he's sincere, that he truly will fight anybody. I don't think there's any truth to any of the narrative that he flinched because it was Chandler. I don't believe that at all. As a matter of fact, I don't even believe that that has changed. I believe if Conor comes back, which is extremely unlikely and already rumored to be as soon as June of next year, which is just completely ridiculous that we would even talk about, but it's still Chandler. Like, Chandler versus Oliveira would have no impact on McGregor returning against Chandler in June of the following year. So, needs an assist. He needs an assist from the Sheik. I'll give him that assist. That's the only part I gotta know. And I do have to know. Are we honoring the contract that we have in its entirety? Period and the end. You just need a date. Is that where we're at? Or are we talking about changing the contract? Are we living in Crazyville with McGregor Sports? Like, are we doing those things? Because they are two very different conversations. One, I cannot help with. But neither can the Sheik. All right, everybody, that's it for today's episode. Thank you for listening. And I want to remind you that if you would like to support this wonderful program, you can make sure to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Thank you for doing that. I'm going to be back with more on Friday. Until then, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.
Make no mistake, Trump-backed Bernie Moreno was a MAGA mistake for black families in Ohio.
We're not going to replace racism in this country from decades ago with a new form of racism, which is what DEI is.
If Bernie Moreno is elected senator, he will support the MAGA playbook and implement the thinly disguised racist Project 2025 agenda. That means ending diversity, equity, and inclusion programs that exist to correct the impacts of racism. MAGA extremists like Moreno believe programs that have helped our families are entitlement programs, but they have no problem giving their buddies a boost by passing more tax giveaways for rich folks like themselves. Black Americans like me have worked hard and persevered in fighting for a fair shot. We've come too far to let self-serving extremists like Bernie Moreno take us back. That's why we must re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown. He has fought for equal opportunity for black families and will continue to do so. Go to OhioVoterGuide.org and register by October 7th. Paid for by Win Senate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee. Make no mistake, Trump-backed Bernie Moreno was a MAGA mistake for black families in Ohio.
We're not going to replace racism in this country from decades ago with a new form of racism, which is what DEI is.
If Bernie Moreno is elected senator, he will support the MAGA playbook and implement the thinly disguised racist Project 2025 agenda. That means ending diversity, equity, and inclusion programs that exist to correct the impacts of racism. MAGA extremists like Moreno believe programs that have helped our families are entitlement programs, but they have no problem giving their buddies a boost by passing more tax giveaways for rich folks like themselves. Black Americans like me have worked hard and persevered in fighting for a fair shot. We've come too far to let self-serving extremists like Bernie Moreno take us back. That's why we must re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown. He has fought for equal opportunity for black families and will continue to do so. Go to OhioVoterGuide.org and register by October 7th. Paid for by Win Senate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.